I think you got to learn how to not take no as an answer from people. I think we went to about 14 different banks before we were able to find someone that believed in our vision, and we'd learn different things from each bank that we went to.
Welcome to The Turndown. Today I sit down with Dallin Tate. Dallin Tate is founder, owner, operator of Bluff Dwellings. Bluff Dwelling is a beautiful property in the middle of, you could say, nowhere, but also in the middle of a fantastic mountainous region in the U.S. Dallin opened his property in the middle of a pandemic and learned the hard way on how to scale his business, on how to sort of overcome challenges. So I invite you to discover his journey as a newly minted hotelier, if you will, with a background in touring and excursions. And I can't wait to discover his properties. I want to go definitely after my conversation with him. His destination, his place became part of my bucket list. And I look forward going on a ski tour with him. Dallin, welcome to The Turndown. It's great to welcome you to this episode of the podcast. I'm extremely excited to talk to you about your experience as an owner and operator of beautiful destination property and excursion company. Dallin, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sebastian. Thanks for having me.
Perfect. I want to talk about how you get started. Before we go into sort of what's keeping you up at night, I want to talk about how you got started in the industry. It's my understanding that you started with excursion before you became a hotelier. Is that true?
Yeah, I can give you some history. So I moved here about 2011. I've worked in the hospitality industry for about 13 years. Started out with guiding. Worked at ski resorts, ski instructing, climbing. I moved to the region. I actually met my wife at Southern Utah University. I was teaching climbing courses over there. Moved over to Blanding. Turned out her family, her dad was starting a guiding company called Four Corners Adventures, and was able to join and partner with him and start off. We did everything from land tours, canyoneering, climbing, hiking, did a little bit of biking. That didn't work so well. We quit doing that. And then we bought a rafting company called Wild Rivers Expeditions in 2013 on the San Juan River, which is a beautiful river. It flows down into Lake Powell. We offer trips from 3 days, 4 days, up to 7 days. And it's just a beautiful place. So really, it's the wilderness. That's what brought us here. There's hundreds of miles of canyons, just a beautiful, beautiful area, wilderness. Not sure if you're familiar with Moab, but we're about 2 hours south of Moab in a place called Bluff. And if you're into the outdoors, there's no better place to be.
That sounds amazing. And you're surrounded by multiple national parks, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, so we're right on what they call the Grand Circle. Lots of people will fly into Las Vegas or Salt Lake, and then you can do like a week-long trip, road trip. You hit like Grand Canyon, Monument Valley, Arches, Canyonlands, Bryce, and Zion. So we see lots of visitors that are doing that, lots of people that are passing through. I think one of the reasons we wanted to start a hotel is, as we were doing our river trips, is Bluff is a small community. Now there's four or five other hotels, lots of Airbnbs. But at that time, our guests were staying up to an hour away because all the rooms were full. My in-laws, their name's Jared and Spring, they owned a small bed and breakfast up in Monticello, Utah, about 10 to 12 rooms. One of the things we realized with kind of a smaller property and the seasonality of the region is, with that many rooms, you can't really hire help. You're kind of tied to the project. If you hire anybody to help you, then there's not much profit at the end of the year. So you're more tied to it. So with Bluff Dwellings, and you can go look at our website, you can see the property. It's beautiful. It's built right up against 250-foot cliffs. And we tried really, really hard to honor the cultures that have been here in the past and just the beautiful canyons. But we decided we had to have at least 50 rooms. We wanted to have 50 rooms so that we could hire the help that we needed and be able to create jobs for people and really that was kind of the number. As we looked at all the projections, that was kind of the number we came up with, though, that we could hire the help. And
so is it fair to say that you created the hotel business to enable, I guess, travelers that experience the tours to have a place to stay that is more convenient and, you know, that would actually help drive greater demand in the excursion and the rafting business?
Yeah. In some ways, you could say we built the hotel to fuel our hobby of the tour. And really, we wanted to create a destination resort where people could come stay for a week. And once you get here, I mean, if for like corporate groups, we do all the catering, we've got food, we've got conference rooms. But then we can get you out into slot canyons, or like we did a bachelorette party a year ago that they found us on Instagram. They flew out. They rented one of our two-room suites. They stayed for 4 days, and they did a day on the river. They did a day of canyoneering, and they did a day of side-by-sides or razors, 4x4 tours. And that's really kind of what we wanted, is a destination where people could disconnect, get out, enjoy the solitude. We're also a dark sky town, so all the lights in town. Bluff's really small. There's only about 250 people that live here. But if you look at our resort, you come here, you won't see any open light bulbs. Everything's pointed down on the ground so that you can see the Milky Way, in the night sky. So you can sit out in the hot tub and really just see the entire night sky, which is just, people love it.
That's awesome. I love the fact that you're not pointing to the sky and that, you know, you're creating almost like a sustainable experience. There is no pollution of light there. It's what you should see.
Yeah. And we're trying really hard to keep it that way.
That makes sense. I'm curious, like, I'm a skier myself, so I was curious, like, what was your home mountain, and do you miss skiing, or is there a mountain close by?
Yeah, so we're right in the Four Corners. We're right near Colorado, so there's ski resorts about an hour and a half away. But just 20 minutes from where I live, you can get up into the backcountry. I do a lot of touring, though, so you skin up and ski down, or we'll snowmobile in, skin up, and ski. So we do a lot of that. So
that's awesome. You can combine your passion with your work, and you allow people to discover, I guess, their passion alongside it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Some things we keep for ourselves. I don't guide skiing. I like to do that myself now.
Okay. So there's some trails and some mountain areas where you're not taking tourists that you want to keep to yourself.
But if they've got the gear, I mean, I'd still love to point them in the right direction. And it is a beautiful spot, because you can go skiing one day and you can go hiking the next day in 55-degree weather. So we've got a wide range of things to do here.
That's fantastic. All right, well, let's go to our typical opening question, which is, you know, as a general manager of a beautiful property, what is keeping you up at night these days?
Yeah, that question always makes me laugh, because I've got 2-year-old twins at home.
Okay, so that is the quick answer, right?
I've been sleep deprived for a really long time. But as far as business goes, I think, like right now, some of the things that keep us up at night is just overall cash flow. This time of year, Bluff's very seasonal. So from about Thanksgiving time until March, everyone disappears. So we've been thinking, working on different ways to get people here in the winter. The hiking's actually beautiful. You just got shorter days. Just trying to work our way through the financing and figuring out how to... We are keeping the doors open through winter. In the past, we used to shut down for a month or two. But we found it's much better to just stay open and keep our staff on board and not have to start over every spring.
Yeah.
So we built Bluff Dwellings. A little bit more history just on Bluff Dwellings is we're on a 16-acre piece of land. About 8 acres of that we were able to build on. But we built it from the ground up. We had to be really creative with the way we built it. Bluff and San Juan County, It's the largest county in Utah. It might be in the United States, but it's very small. There's about 2 people per square mile is the population. So we had to be creative with the way we, and it's also the poorest county in Utah. So we were really creative with the way we did it. My father-in-law, his name's Jared. He's also a general contractor. So we were able to build the property.
Yourself.
When we say we built it, I mean, we actually were out there pouring concrete and digging the footers and framing everything. But we opened in phases. We had our grand opening right during COVID. So we opened up our first 33 rooms on March 6th of 2020, and 7 days later was the travel ban, and it really put a delay on things. We thought we'd probably lose the whole thing, but we were able to work our way through all that. I'm sure people are tired of hearing about COVID, so I don't think we need to go into details there. But in short, we just finished construction in fall of 2023. So we just finished off our 56 room about 3 months ago. So
you could call yourself a, I guess, excursion guide, a developer, and hotelier by chance, as ultimately what, right?
Yeah. And it's not just me. I mean, it's a combination of our different skill sets, but I kind of focus on the tour company and the hotel, and Jared focuses on the development. And we've had such a good time at it that we're actually, we just broke ground on an RV park. We're going to keep building and
expanding.
We're playing with the idea of expanding Bluff Dwellings in the future, adding on a full restaurant. Right now we've got a cafe, which is great food, but lots of people want a restaurant where they can sit down and get a drink. So that's in the plans. And then we've also got, we're considering doing another hotel in a neighboring town. So
fantastic. Sounds like something is going right for you.
Yeah. I think things are going really well. It's still stressful. I mean, I never thought we'd be developing multi-million dollar projects coming from a background of being a river rat. But we love it.
Yeah.
Challenge. And we see a lot of opportunity in a place where it's kind of overlooked because it's away from everything.
You must have had crazy stories like in this time from what March 2020 to now when you finished building the property. Talk to me about a crazy day where nothing went the right way. There must have been stories like that.
Well, for one, we're the kind of people that pick a date and then we stick with it. So we were going to do our grand opening on March 6th. It was a 15-room building. So our buildings are split up into, there's 15 in our main buildings. We've got 3 of those. That's 45 rooms. And then the additional rooms are kind of standalone condos. They got full kitchens in them. But I remember when we decided we were going to open that date, the night before we were supposed to open. But we had guests booked in the rooms and we were still in there hooking up water heaters and hadn't tested any of the plumbing and still painting a couple rooms. And I remember we worked till probably 2 or 3 in the morning. We were back there at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning and we finished like at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We were still sweeping out a couple of the rooms as guests were checking in to the building. So it was...
You had your own definition of a soft opening, right? Like you were... You were running a business alongside things.
Yeah. And this is like, as we're running a tour company and a rafting company, it's a small... we put about 3,000 people on the river per year. So it's not a huge operation, but it's got lots of room to grow. And you go check out our reviews. People love what we're doing here.
That's awesome. What is sort of like something that surprises your guests when they arrive? Is it the nature? Is it the surrounding? Like, help us understand, because it's hard. And pictures probably don't do it justice, right? You arrive, you experience the property, the location, et cetera. What's their sort of visceral reaction?
Yeah. I mean, I think as you come in, I mentioned to you, San Juan County is one of the poorest counties in the state. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you drive, and we're also right on the border of the Navajo Reservation. About 70 to 80% of our staff live on the reservation. So as you're driving through the region, you're driving through, I think it's beautiful, but a lot of the desert, you just look out and there's nothing for as far as you can see. And then as you drop into our canyon, you drop into this beautiful canyon and there's 200-foot sandstone walls. And then our resort's built right into the cliffs. So we get lots of people that just pull into our parking lot and we'll see them taking pictures and they get back in their car and head on down the road. And then a lot of our guests also find us by word of mouth. We got lots of repeat guests. And I think they're surprised to find a resort of our quality in such a remote location.
Nice. That's fantastic. You must have had, I guess, learnings. Like, think of, our audience. A lot of them are about to open a new property or are thinking about opening their own businesses, etc. What were some of the more painful learnings as you're developing, a complete new hotel business that you say, I wish I had known? I wish somebody would have told me that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you got to learn, for one, I think you got to learn how to not take no as an answer from people. I think we've been to about 14 different banks before we were able to find someone that believed in our vision. And we'd learn different things from each bank that we went to of what they're looking for. And a lot of that wasn't me. A lot of that was Jared. But I think that was one thing we learned. All the different technologies that come with hotels, as far as like key locks go and different things, learning some of that was a challenge. All of the IT stuff, like networking, we're in such a remote location that just turns out to be something that I've had to learn how to do.
Yourself, probably. You're supporting that infrastructure yourself.
So learning how to like run all of the keys for the doors and all the networking for the different Wi-Fi locations and different things. That was really difficult to learn, all the telephone stuff. But I feel like just in the last few years, I feel like technology's come to a spot where boutique hotels can compete with franchises and different things, and that before I think would have been really difficult. So,
who do you feel you compete with the most? Is it the big brands? Is it, a similar boutique property?
There's not a lot of, in fact, I don't think there's a single franchised hotel in San Juan County where we live. There is another beautiful resort here in town called the Desert Rose. They've got a beautiful property that was family owned. They've also got about 50 rooms. That's probably one of our biggest competitors. And then Monument Valley, there's a place called Golding's that's been around. I think they just had their 100-year anniversary. They've got like an amazing property. So those are some of our main competitors. Moab, we're trying to get people to come out of Moab. Have you ever been to Moab before?
I haven't, but it's on my bucket list.
Yeah. I mean, it's got the national parks and it's just a beautiful, they've got multiple restaurants. That's one of the challenges with Bluff is, I think we've got like 4 restaurants, but who knows which one's going to be open on any night of the week. In fact, when we started Bluff Dwellings, we weren't going to do any kind of food. We didn't want to do food, but our first fall of being open, we had guests staying here with nowhere to eat within 30 miles. So that fall, we looked at the property and we said, okay, we can fit a little cafe right here. Talked to the engineers and we broke ground on a little cafe that we opened up next spring. So,
Was it difficult to get a license for liquor or for alcohol you can't get without a restaurant, or what's your setup?
It has been tricky. We were able to get a beer license pretty easily, so we sell beer in our gift shop, and that's been good. We're currently working on a catering and a banquet license, which in Utah it's a little tricky to get those. There's just a lot of hoops you got to jump through, but we should have that in the spring so that we'll be able to have wine for room service and events. So we'll be able to do that next year, which we're looking forward to because we get a lot of European travelers. And if you can't get a glass of wine within 30 miles, 40 miles, could be some upset folks.
let's talk a little bit about guests. And I'm curious, sort of, you know, are the European travelers different from the domestic travelers in their expectation and how they, or is it pretty much the same?
No, I'd say we get most of our international travelers between July and early September, especially the month of August, which is great because all the domestic travelers know it's too hot and they don't want to come here. But all the international folks, they're all off in the whole country shuts down in August and they all come to Utah because we're full. International travelers here, most of them will only stay one night. That's a difference. I think our domestic travelers are come for two or three nights. The international travelers are trying to get it in as many national parks as possible. So they'll only stay for one night. So
they may do 2 weeks in the U.S. and every day they go to a different state or a different destination.
Yeah. So like our housekeeping in the month of August, they're turning over the entire resort almost every day. And we were often, during the month of August, we were sold out pretty much every night, but mostly one night stays. And while the rest of the year, we're averaging 2.5 nights per guest.
So that's a different behavior. You mentioned that you're in a town with 250 employees. You must have challenges like with recruitment and staff. Help me, how you manage this effectively.
Yeah, and I see lots of folks that have struggled with that. Lots of businesses, it's something we were worried about. But like I mentioned, we're also right on the edge of the Navajo Reservation. And the San Juan River is actually the dividing line that we do river trips on. So everything on the left side of the river's Navajo Reservation. So we haven't had too hard of a time. I mean, we still face some turnover, but I think that's one of the things we've done really well in 2023 was creating teams and some managers and leadership team just from the locals that do live in the area off the reservation and from blending. In fact, I don't think any of our staff actually lives in Bluff. Most of them probably drive 15 to 30 minutes to get to work.
Okay. So you're able to source from outside as well. And it doesn't sound like you have a hard time finding great people.
I think we've put a lot of time and effort into training our managers and our leaders. That's one of the things I'm proud of that we've done is instead of bringing outside talent to run the hotel, and we've been able to train people from nearby and keep that revenue like within the community versus bringing in outside help.
Interesting. I'm curious, especially the international travelers, but also the domestic travelers, how do you drive demand? How do you create awareness, right? You're an independent hotel, right? You're an independent business, if you will. So, you know, you don't necessarily have the marketing power that maybe a Marriott or Hilton has, you know, the brand awareness. How do people discover your business?
Yeah. We use a great marketing company. We outsourced that a couple years ago that helped us with the tour company for a long time. Do a lot of email marketing, SEO. I think one of the most important things is just having a great website that people can look at and it's easy to book. We're driving right now about 65% direct bookings.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
So we've worked really hard at just having beautiful images, at smooth booking process. We still rely on the OTAs quite a bit, but the more that we can book direct, I think the better. And I think over time through word of mouth, and I think really just having a beautiful website is the main thing. We do a lot of AdWords and SEO and stuff like that.
Cool. Do people call before they book with you? Like, do they come with questions ahead of their reservations, or what sort of the typical question they may have?
For the tour company, yeah, we get a lot of people calling and they have lots of questions of what to expect on the river and different things like that. For the hotel, I think I'd have to go look it up, but more than half, probably 80% is booking through our website or through the OTAs. Yeah. So doing a lot of phone calls. We do, anytime someone books a trip with us, so if they book a river trip, they get an email for the hotel. And if they book
promoting the hotel,
and if they book a hotel trip, if they book a night at the hotel, they'll get a thing that says, oh, we also run river trips. If you want 15% off, here's the promo code. So we cross market a lot between the two companies, which I think has helped us quite a bit.
What are you doing in social media? Everyone talks about, hey, you have to be on TikTok, you have to be on Instagram or the gram or whatever, you know, the young generation is calling it these days. But, you know, are you heavily engaged? Is this a source of demand for you?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because it's hard to track. It's like Google AdWords. I can see, oh, I spent this much and I got this much return. Facebook and Instagram, we use both of those. I think a lot of people do find us that way. And the property is beautiful. So a lot of our people find us through other people on social media sharing pictures. And they call, I think it's FOMO or fear of missing out. I think there's a lot of that that comes through social media. It's far, and then also we're just in such a beautiful location of, it's really hard to describe, but a lot of people, once they discover it, they just keep coming back year after year. So
that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I'm curious, like, you're a developer, you have a lot of ideas and project. If you could take out a magic wand and say, I want to change one thing about my property, what would it be?
Oh, right now, I think I wish I had a full restaurant.
Okay.
Because that's the thing that people are requesting the most. We also don't have any elevators in our buildings. Some of our buildings are three stories tall. I never realized how much of an issue be for people. So, but I mean, if I had unlimited money, elevators would have made sense. But for our project where it was, it didn't quite make sense. But that's something I'd probably change if I could. Or if I Bluff is a, like I said, it's a small town. They don't have a sewer system, so everything here is on septic systems. And we have a wastewater treatment plant like right here on the property. So all of our wastewater that we use is recycled right here on the property, and we can use it to water all of our vegetation throughout the whole property. So that's a great thing. But if Bluff had a sewer, I could add a whole bunch more rooms. So
I guess that's an important piece. So let's get the city to build a sewage system so that you can expand, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, investing into a new septic tank can probably be quite expensive.
It just takes up space. So we've maxed out the space on our land. That makes sense.
That makes sense. I want to talk a little bit about technology, and especially sort of, I guess from a hotelier's perspective, you're using, I believe, Cloud Beds, but you're using other tools as well. So you help me understand a little bit your tech setup and how you leverage it.
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of a big learning curve for us, but we've used Cloud Beds. And one of my concerns is that it wouldn't, as we grew, it wouldn't serve all of our needs. But so far, it's worked extremely well. I mentioned just people being able to book online. I think that's such an important thing. And it's also just super easy to teach our staff. So our staff, if you can use an iPad or a phone, or actually, it's just super easy to learn. We also use one called Whistle, which links up with Cloud Beds. That allows us to text all of our guests.
Nice.
I found a lot of guests don't reply to emails, or in fact, they don't like to answer phones, but they'll text us. So every time you book a trip or you book a room, you get a text message that says, oh, we're so excited to have you. If there's anything we can do to make your stay better. And then that goes directly to our front desk. So our front desk and we have a 24-hour front desk, and they're able to communicate with guests really effectively that way. We're also using, I think you guys have had the founder of Flexkeeping, but we use Flexkeeping for all of our housekeeping and maintenance. That's been super helpful, just getting rid of paper. And I hate paper. Anytime I can get rid of paper, I'm getting rid of it. And then one new one that we tried this year, we're also using some AI-powered revenue management. So our prices, they'll change depending on demand, and it's all, we set it in the parameters, so it's not 100% AI, but it since we've started using that, we've seen a good increase.
So you're happy with the results as it's driving value for you?
Yeah, so far we've been really happy with it, so.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Do you see need for further technology? Like if there's anything missing right now, whether that's in cloud bits or any other tech, like what are you shopping for right now?
One of the things I've been looking into, and I feel like it's not quite there, but it will be soon, is just self-check-in kiosks.
Lifeo?
I know it's something that CloudMeds is working on, and there's several companies working on it, but I think guests are getting used to that, or like all of our locks are Bluetooth enabled, so
Oh, nice.
when that tech comes in, people would be able to check in with their phones and access their rooms with their phones. Wouldn't have.
And do you still give physical keys or are you on a pin at which
We use RFID cards,
Okay.
and they work great. And I don't see that going away anytime soon. A lot of our travelers are older, retired, and I think checking in with their phone, they're not gonna like it. But I think that's a technology that is up and coming that we'll see more and more in hotels.
Yeah. I like the physical key somehow. I mean, I'm a complete tech nerd, but my phone is always, undercharged, and I kind of like that old key in a way.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
but I agree with you. I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. But interesting.
Yeah.
Anything else that you think you'd love to see happen?
Not that I can really think of. One that I've just started exploring is there's a couple of different rewards programs, one called Stash, but just hotel rewards. That's something I've been looking into as well. So,
Oh, nice. Oh, nice. That's a very interesting partner of ours for sure. I should definitely check it out. Before we wrap up, I want to leave on sort of, I guess, two areas that I want to focus on. One is I'd love to share a best practice. Anything that you say, if I had to redo it again as a, developer of a property, make sure you do this, right? Whatever it is, right? Like, because I think you've had your experience in the last 3, 4 years. You've done an amazing job creating this beautiful destination resort. And I'm sure there's others here on the program listening that are curious, like, what did you learn, Dallin, that you say everyone should do? So that's one area. And the other area is you talked about two children that are at home 2 years old. How do you balance that two, right? Like this is for me, sort of my kids are a bit older, so I do, and I don't envy you right now, right? But I'm curious if you had any thoughts and how to balance the two. So maybe let's start with the family and end on a best practice.
Yeah, so I mentioned the 2-year-old twins. I've also got 3 other kids, so I've got
Okay. Oh, wow. Congratulations. Chef, that.
I've got a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and 2-year-old twins. So balancing that is really difficult, but my wife's able to be a stay-at-home mom, which really makes it all work. I think one of the things that's helped us to balance it is everything that we do is cloud-based. So we've tried really hard to stay that way so that I can still spend time at home. And if I need to jump on for just a minute, I can almost fix anything without being on the property, which is excellent. And then also just training our staff and our leaders. When we very first opened, it was hard to leave. I felt like I couldn't be gone from the property, or things were going wrong, or we're putting out fires, or if I went on vacation, it was like I had to keep my phone near me all the time. But we've spent a really, the last year and a half, we've spent developing just a team of leaders. And I think that's one of the things that I'm most proud of, and that helps us to be able to manage family life and also still run a successful, I mean, two businesses. I mean, tour company, hotel, cafe. Yeah. We also run a spa. I don't think I even mentioned the spa.
Wow.
But we've got a spa. And then Jared runs a construction company. So between between kind of the four different companies, we've got about 100 employees, which is a big, I mean, where we live, that's a big contributor to the company. But
all right, one best practice that you say every developer, every entrepreneur should do this.
I think one thing that just comes to mind again is just developing that team, finding the right people, and creating a culture where people want to be there. Maybe that's not so much on the developer side, but at the hotelier side for sure. We spent a couple of years. Well, not a couple of years, but there's a book there. It's called I Love It Here. It's by Cliff Pulver. And it's about creating a business where people want to be there. And that's something we really focused on. And just having that culture really makes it possible to find the right people and to not have to be on the property all the time. I mean, I'm still here 40 plus hours a week, but I can disconnect, which is important. On kind of the development side, I'd say borrow more money than you think you need in the beginning, because it's gonna cost more.
It's gonna run out. Okay,
it's gonna run out, and then you have to borrow more money, and at that point, it's probably gonna be more expensive. And then just soundproofing. Make sure you've got everything soundproofed really, really well. We did everything the engineers told us to do. In fact, we doubled it, but we've got hardwood floors in some of the rooms. All the rooms have hardwood floors. So we ended up ripping out sheetrock in some of the buildings and adding even more soundproofing, which was not cheap. So, but that's something that I'd say, if you got multiple room levels, make sure you nail that the first time.
Excellent. Well, look, on this bombshell, I'm not bombshell, on this mic drop moment, thanks for... I'd like to wrap it up, Dallin. Thank you so much for joining the program, for sharing your insight, your story, and most importantly, what you've learned throughout the last few years on running a fantastic business. Thank you so much for your time.
Yep, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to The Turndown. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in next week as we discover new exciting guests.